Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Jurassic Park Radio. Join host Todd Jurassic as he explores the great outdoors and the great unknown. Here we go.
Hey, welcome everyone. This is Todd Jurassic, your host of Jurassic Park Radio. Tonight's guest is legendary Pennsylvania UFO, Bigfoot, and mysteries researcher, author, TV personality of almost 50 years, Stan Gordon. He's the author of multiple books, including the groundbreaking Silent Invasion on the UFO-Bigfoot connection, and was a chief researcher on the world-famous Keckberg PA UFO crash in 1965. Stan currently stars in the hot new crypto paranormal video Invasion on Chestnut Ridge by Small-Time Monsters Production and Wish for Giants, which is another movie he comes to help disadvantaged youth coming here soon. Anyhow, welcome, Stan. Are you there?
Yes, we are. Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Hey, no problem. It's glad to see somebody from back home, and it's exciting to see stuff back from Pennsylvania. If everyone doesn't know this, I'm from Pennsylvania, same part of the state that Stan's from, and he's had quite a life. I wish I'd had that back there. But Stan, you've been involved in this stuff for years. I mean, it's going on 48 years. You have a wealth of information. It's great to have you on. I just wanted to just so many things I want to ask you. I'm just going to throw out a few things and just let you talk. And when did you first get interested in monsters and UFOs and the unknown?
Well, believe it or not, it's actually now going on 59 years of research. I started
I started this in
1959 when I was 10 years old. And people always ask me, how did you get involved at such a young age? Well, coincidentally, my birthday happens to be during the Halloween season. And my parents decided to get me an AM radio as a birthday gift. And I was tuning around the AM radio that evening. And there was some talk radio on, and they were talking about strange happenings, ghosts and flying saucers and weird creatures, and my ears perked up, and I'm listening to the show, and I'm wondering, are these people making these stories up? Are they telling the truth? Well, that's when I began to make a lot of frequent trips at our local Greensburg Library and read all the books they had on the subject, and that's basically how it all started for me. And now in all the years I've been doing this, I have personally never seen a UFO or Bigfoot or anything I couldn't identify. I've seen a lot of evidence out in the field. I've interviewed thousands of witnesses, but I've never had my own personal encounter.
Wow, that's crazy. I mean, I know that I've actually had encounters in that area. But, you know, the thing is one thing I noticed when researching, you mentioned, I think it was on the Invasion Chestnut Ridge, is that you try to get – you're taking what is fact and leaving it at that instead of running with it. I know in any type of research, your adrenaline gets going, the UFO, Bigfoot, I don't care if you're researching giants or Black Panthers, you get excited and everything starts to become what you're looking for. And I think as a researcher, anything, and that's one thing I really like what you said, I only know one other guy that I've ever heard that come out of his mouth, and you know, he's about your age, has your kind of wisdom, and that is you got to be able to look at every angle is something to be able to determine, okay, maybe even though I want it to be a UFO, it's not. And that's one thing I thought was pretty cool when you mentioned in that Chestnut Ridge video. But what got you drew you heavily into the research to begin with?
Okay, well, to go back a little bit, and what you just said is the way I've always been out in the field. I started out in the field actually in 1965 after the Keckberg UFO incident of December 9th. So I've been out in the field ever since, and something I learned back then, and it's the same today, which I believe is what you're referring to, I receive a lot of reports. My hotline's been open since 1969. It never stops ringing. Between that and the emails I receive pretty much almost every day, it's amazing what goes on out there. But what I found out long ago is that many reports, whether it be a UFO sighting or a Bigfoot or a cryptid or other phenomena, a lot of the reports initially sound pretty interesting and strange, but when you take the time to properly investigate the reports, many are determined to be either misidentifications of something natural or man-made, especially with UFO sightings. You get a lot of reports of bright planets and stars and reentry of space debris and bright meteors like we had a few days ago, and another huge fireball meteor came over the Pittsburgh area on August 25th. You get a lot of these things you can track down, Chinese lanterns, drones. You know, you get all kind of things that look strange under certain conditions, but you can figure out what they are. Even with Bigfoot, I mean, there's been misidentification of very huge shaggy dogs and bear and hunters out there in camouflage outfits. So there's a lot of things you can determine. And that's always been my position, to try to keep an open mind, be skeptical, look at the evidence, look at the data, and try to figure out if there's a logical explanation before you run with the fact that you're dealing with something that's very strange and unusual. However, every year we get reports that come in that are not easily dismissed. And this goes on even in recent weeks. Reports come in here all year round, every year, all over Pennsylvania. A lot of it's in southwest PA. And, yes, a lot of this has gone on along that Chestnut Ridge. And for those that are not familiar with it, I mean, I've been dealing with reports on the ridge since the late 1960s, but the reports go back much further than that. The Chestnut Ridge is a mountain range that extends, it's about 100 miles long, stretches from Preston County, West Virginia, through Westmoreland, Fayette, Indiana County, and southwest PA. It is probably one of the most active areas year after year for all kind of strange events. We have all kind of UFO reports for years and years. We get reports of these, what I call mini UFOs, these very small little objects that come up close to people, up to their homes. A lot of Bigfoot encounters, many, many, especially around the dairy side along the ridge in Westmoreland County, quite commonly going back to at least the 70s. Black Panther sightings, Thunderbirds, these gigantic bird sightings that people continue to report. Other weird, weird creature reports coming in. Underground sounds, mystery booms, just all kind of weird things go on along the ridge. And I have spent many days and nights for years and years all up along those areas. Other researchers have been up there for years. They continue to be up in those areas and investigating reports. And some of them have been lucky. They've had some their own personal encounters with things they couldn't explain. I've been involved in a lot of investigations up there. I never saw anything I couldn't explain except for evidence out in the field, but at least one occasion, and we can talk about that massive UFO Bigfoot wave of 1973, when a lot of activity was going on in those areas and our teams were out there day and night investigating reports, and there were some farms out there where people were telling us that these creatures kept coming back and they were seeing strange lights on their property, so we were trying to stake them out as much as we could. And on one particular evening, we had got a call that a creature had been out there, been in the barn, that the animals were very, very upset and scared. And we got out there within about half an hour, and there were tracks in the barnyard. The animals, the dogs wouldn't move. The other animals were cowering. And they had a very big cornfield, and it was dark. And there was something very big, bipedal, far ahead of us, running fast through the cornfield, making a very loud, unusual sound like somebody with asthma, a very heavy, deep breathing sound. So we chased it through the cornfield, and I recorded the sounds, but whatever it was, we could never catch up to it.
That sounds about right. I've been doing Bigfoot stuff for 20-some years off and on and had a lot of weird stuff that either can't catch up to it or if you did, you don't know if you'd want to, so... But it'd be awesome to be able to catch a glimpse in your own home state like that. Now, as far as the Kecksburg, as far as the Chestnut Ridge, is it just from watching the video, the invasion of Chestnut Ridge, which just came out a couple months ago, actually at the end of October, it was really good. It was interesting. From what I gather, it was just a total barrage in 73, 74. I mean, from what I caught – something you said on a radio in another radio program that it was actually, I mean, there was just, it sounded like there was hundreds of people that had seen things and heard things those two summers, which you don't get that impression when you watch the video. The video is very good, by the way, so if you get a chance, watch it. But is that the case? Was it that many, just a complete barrage for 2 years, or was it just
well,
a few?
Yeah,
that,
I mean, yeah, it was an amazing time period, let me tell you. I've got to give you a little history first so you can understand what we're dealing with. 1969, as I mentioned, I set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. back in those days, no internet, no cell phones, a lot more ridicule of the subjects that are in today. I was relatively still young at the time, began to make contact with the local police and the news media, told them what I was doing about the hotline. Well, within probably a couple of weeks after word was getting out that I had this UFO hotline, the phone in my home is ringing around the clock. And I'm getting calls about not only UFO sightings, but anything was strange people were calling me about, from haunted houses and ghosts and mystery sounds and weird footprints and strange creatures and anything weird they were calling. Well, it became apparent very quick I couldn't do this all on my own. So it was my objective to establish a volunteer group of research people to investigate these reports. But what I wanted was to do something different. I wanted to get specialists, scientists, engineers, specialists involved that could respond to cases 24 hours a day and hopefully get on the scene while the phenomenon was ongoing. So that's what I did. In 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer groups that would be doing this for many, many years across Pennsylvania. And it was called, the first group was called the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. Started out here in Greensburg and started out small, moved into the Pittsburgh area, and I was surprised to got involved. I did have scientists and engineers and technicians, and many of them were from Westinghouse and Gulf Research and from Alcoa, and there were college people from the colleges and universities. There were medical people. I had police officers. I had former military intelligence people. It was amazing the group that we got together. And we were all working full-time, but we were set up that we could respond to cases 24 hours a day. So by 1973, we had expanded to cover the whole state of Pennsylvania. The group was becoming very well-known across the state. To our surprise, we were getting referrals from news media, from various agencies, from the state police. And we were just being, I mean, the calls coming in, reports coming in were pretty much nonstop. But then 1973 comes around, and we were lucky that we were already organized because nobody knew what was coming around the bend. 1973, we had the biggest UFO and Bigfoot outbreak in history that went on for weeks and months into 1974. Fall of 1973, the United States experienced a pretty good wave of UFO reports that kind of peaked in the fall of that year. In Pennsylvania, it began the first day of the year and continued to the last day of the year. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of UFO reports coming in. And sure, there were a lot of cases we could track down and identify, but there were multitudes of cases we could not easily dismiss. And many of these were not lights in the sky. These were large structured craft. Big metallic cigar-shaped objects and triangular objects and disks and sometimes smaller objects coming out of large ones. And they were hovering over highways, and there were sightings on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. They were pacing cars. There were landing reports, sometimes where we had some physical evidence on the ground. And back in those days, it was being covered very heavily in the news. So there was a lot of research and news about our investigation, the sightings going on across the state. Even some had made some of the national news wire. And so we had all this UFO activity going on. That was strange in itself. But then in the summer, we have the biggest outbreak of Bigfoot sightings to ever be reported. And that went on for months. And it all began, just to give you a little bit more history, it all began with a phone call that I received from a person who told me I needed to go out and talk to a relative who lived in a rural location out behind the old Green Gate Mall, which is no longer there outside of Greensburg. It was a pretty rural area back in those days. There were some caves around there and a lot of woods and brush. And this fella happened to be in the bathroom that night shaving. I always shaved early because he got up early for work, and it was a warm night. He had the bathroom window up. The screen was in. Began to smell this rotten odor. He said it smelled like rotten cucumber. The people in the house said it smelled more like sulfur. Turned around to look at the window, and here, staring in the window, these two huge glowing red eyes, luminous eyes staring at him. The wind is 8 feet off the ground. And
that
was the beginning of this report. So this guy went to the hospital after this, maybe as a result of that. He was pretty shook up. Went out to interview him a week later. He was still shook up. Found out when I'm interviewing him that several weeks before, some of the local boys had taken a shortcut to the mall through the woods and they heard this noise in the woods, and they thought it was a deer. So I started throwing some rocks in, scare the deer out. To their surprise, a 7 to 8 foot tall, bipedal, hairy, man-like creature comes out of the woods, and this creature walks up behind one of the homes. So I was able to interview some of those boys, and I decided I wanted to go up there and take a look around their property, so I got permission to do that. A few of the kids followed me up the hill, and we're looking around there for a while, and the conditions up there on the ground were not very good, as I recall. Looked around for quite a while, about ready to call it quits, when I happened to look down, and there were two tracks, a partial track, and then a very clearly defined footprint unlike anything I had ever seen before. And the kids ran over and said, what kind of animal can make a track like that? It was 13 inches long and 8 inches wide and clearly three-toed. And wow. I got on the radio, called one of my associates. He came out. We took photographs and measurements, made a cast. And while we're out there, we get a radio call that one of our investigators up in Beaver County, north of Pittsburgh that morning, was investigating a case of something 9 foot tall, was seen looking in a structure, and police found large footprints up there. That was the start of this massive wave that went on for weeks and months. And what was so amazing was many of these Bigfoot sightings, not like you see on the TV shows, many of these were in daylight. Many were extremely close range. We're talking 5, 10, 15, 20 feet away from witnesses, where
wow,
they walked
that's awesome.
Out their mobile homes in front of people's cars. In many of the cases, there was physical evidence at the scene. So either my teams would get out there within minutes or hours after it happened, or the state police or other police departments. So this was all being documented as it was happening. And we were out there 24 hours a day responding to the incidents. Sometimes we would have simultaneous sightings on the same day at the same time from widespread areas. We knew we were dealing with more than one creature. And in some cases, there were two and three of them seen together at the same time. And it was just amazing what was going on. Amazing. And I can tell you, I had a lot of skeptical researchers working with me who got in my group initially. And a lot of these guys, well, many of them unfortunately have passed away. A few of them are still around. I'm still in contact with some of these guys. And a lot of them came in not sure what to believe. But after spending a lot of time out in the field, doing the investigation, interviewing the witnesses, seeing the evidence, seeing the patterns emerge, they all began to realize something's going on here. We just don't know what it is.
Now, let me ask you, on the were there other tracks other than just the three-toed? Were there other I know there were some five-toed ones I saw. I know that there's some Bigfoot researchers that have a problem with there being five-toed, just three and four toes, and I think – you know, this is from a friend, Chester Moore, that could be, and some others, that could be some signs of possible inbreeding where the digits go. And you have, especially in, you know, you get out west, there's, you can go for miles and not see anybody. But here, everything's in patches. I'm sure in Pennsylvania it's like that, especially, you know, and there's just towns everywhere. And it would be, seems to me like maybe you wouldn't be able to, the genetics wouldn't be able to mix. So you would have some inbreeding, which could be a result of maybe the three toes. But I'm curious, was there any other tracks like that that you guys found? Or?
Yes. Yeah, and in fact, in Pennsylvania, the history has been with five-toed footprints. They're typical Bigfoot tracks, are very common in Pennsylvania. But what we'll get into is that we did a lot of very detailed investigation, and some of what we uncovered suggests, and again, I'm reluctant to even say it, but suggests the possibility that we may be dealing with something that's not a normal flesh and blood animal, and I'll get into that. And this is where the five-toed and the three-toed tracks might be a part of this whole phenomena. What I found out years ago, and I started publishing a lot of my data back 40-some years ago, back in the 70s, and I've been in touch with researchers all over the country and around the world for many, many years, and I can tell you, in the areas around the world, in Canada, up out the Pacific Northwest, California, Oregon, where you have a lot of a history of Bigfoot sightings, and you have your typical five-toed tracks, well, very commonly in those areas, they are also finding three-toed and four-toed footprints, which, just think about it, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's strange enough that you could have one type of unknown creature running around for so many years around the country and around the world, and nobody's come up with a body, and then you got these other tracks, And something else I bring up in my lecture is going to have a whole lecture just on this aspect. It's one of my newer ones. It's called Strange Aspects of the Elusive Bigfoot. And it goes into a lot of various strange things we've uncovered about Bigfoot that a lot of people don't know about, or a lot of researchers would rather not know about or deny it happens. But the point is, it's being reported all over the world, and there's some very strange aspects to the whole phenomena. And I think you and I talked about this shortly before we went on the air, but my perception of the Bigfoot phenomenon has changed a lot, even though I keep an open mind to all possibilities. But when I got involved in this, I mean, I was very aware of the history of Bigfoot in Pennsylvania, because the reports go back to the Native American legends in the state, and there's numerous newspaper accounts from the 1800s that talk about encounters with these hairy creatures and tracks being found in the woods, so it's not a new phenomena. The earliest firsthand account where I interviewed somebody goes back to 1931 up in Indian Head, Fayette County, along the Chestnut Ridge. So these things have been going on for a long, long time. I had always felt, from the investigation I did on Bigfoot in the late 60s up to the present, and even in recent weeks and months, and I always felt that Bigfoot was very likely an unknown animal, an unknown primate. And I still keep an open mind to all possibilities till we have the evidence. But many, many strange details have come to my attention over the years, especially during that wave of 1973. So if you like, I'll go back and start telling you about some of the weird things that happened during that wave of 73.
Yeah, talk about them. I know that you had to have, and let me just say first before you go and start down that trail, I know from being off and on Bigfoot stuff for 20 years, you probably got you're one of the first to, you know, push the UFO and Bigfoot the potential together, and you had to have been crucified verbally, you know, and just kind of shunned because, you know, you're upsetting the apple cart. But, you know, you know what? You got to take what you see and what the evidence is, and even if you don't like it, you got to examine it. So, yeah, go ahead. I just know I could just imagine, you know, back then in the 70s and stuff, and just getting what I know with Bigfoot reachers today, you know, and hunting for a, you know, unknown primate. And this really goes, you're challenging the paradigm with this whole 73 and whole book Silent Invasion. So I know it couldn't have been too fun at times, the rejection you got, but go ahead. Yeah, I want to about it.
It actually, you know, back in those days when I was publishing it, yeah, you had some ridicule, but it really wasn't bad. And I had multitudes of well-known researchers around the country, around the world, talk to me confidentially, and they said, everything you've talked about, I'm familiar with, they said. We know what's going on, but a lot of them told me they were afraid to publish it because they didn't want to get in trouble with their peers or be ridiculed. And a lot of the witnesses, I mean, even today, most of the witnesses that have these experiences, they don't want any publicity. But I can tell you, in more and more recent years, many in the Bigfoot field are now beginning to ask the same questions I have. For example, where's the bodies after so many years? And they're beginning to look at some of what I published, and others are publishing and talking about this now, and they're beginning to realize that there's a lot more to this than any of us understand. So, okay, going back to 1973, all these reports are coming in. And you got to, as I mentioned before, you got to remember, there was no internet back then, no cell phones. People very commonly, when they were scared, they called the police. So a lot of these reports initially were coming into the police departments. And some of these incidents, again, some of the things that turned up, for example, at that time, my teams would get out to some locations, and this would be within minutes to hours after the incidents, and there'd be fresh footprints there. There'd be trails of tracks. And I had anthropologists in the group. I had forensic people. I mean, we had people who knew how to deal with these type of things and what was hoaxed and what wasn't. And what was so strange is that there will be series of footprints that would suddenly just stop and disappear when there should have been tracks. Even in cases of fresh snow, even in recent years, where there's thick, heavy, clean, fresh snow, there's these huge tracks deep in the snow with huge strides, no other tracks around, and they just suddenly vanish. That doesn't make any sense, and it didn't back in 1973. And then we began to get other reports that were stranger during that time, and then we began to see a pattern. We would have, for example, a UFO sighting in a certain area within minutes to hours to days later, you would have a Bigfoot sighting or vice versa. Then we began to have those cases with a Bigfoot UFO seen together at the same time and place. And even though they're much rare, because most of the time UFOs are not seen with Bigfoot or vice versa, but there are very well documented cases of it. And what I keep trying to stress when I'm talking about this, I am not suggesting that Bigfoot is an alien from outer space riding around in a spaceship, because we don't know what we're dealing with. We don't know for sure what the UFOs represent. I mean, there's been discussion for years, you know, that some of these could be extraterrestrial, maybe a small percentage are. But more and more, for a lack of a better term, the evidence is showing up that we're dealing with something that's interdimensional. Could some of these be time travelers? Could some of these be unknown natural phenomena? We just do not know. I've said for years, we're dealing with more than one origin for the unknown category of UFOs. So, anyhow, just to give you a couple examples going back to that time period. September 27, 1973, north of Pittsburgh, there's two women waiting for somebody to pick them up out in the country. They see this 7 to 8 foot tall, hairy Bigfoot creature with long arms covered with white hair. You don't hear about the white ones that often, but they're out there. And it's running across the road towards the woods. That was very strange, but in one of its hands, it was carrying a small glowing ball of light. And as it ran into the woods, a short time later, an object comes across the sky and projects a beam of light down into the woods where the creature ran into. We thought, that's pretty interesting.
That's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Then,
I'd love to see that.
Yeah. Well, that's just an example of some of the reports. Then we got into that major case that it was, you know, they did a little bit on it on Invasion of Chestnut Ridge, which was that great story about the UFO on the ground with the two Bigfoot. And that's only a part of the story. My team was there. October 25th, 1973, probably the best documented case of this type anywhere ever recorded in the world, and one of the strangest cases. And without getting into the whole story, you've read it in The Silent Invasion. I recommend people get the book. It's so detailed. There's so many weird things in there, things you've never heard of before. But anyhow, October 25th, 1973, back up in Fayette County again along the ridge, about 10:30 that night, I get a call from a state trooper. He had just investigated this incident, and when he called me, it was obvious he was a little shook up. And he said, I think there's a good chance something's still up in the pasture. You need to get a team up here as soon as you can. So it was already late at night, but we got our team together. We got our equipment, our radiation equipment, all the other gear together. We found our way up there in the early morning hours. So what had happened about 9 o'clock that night, about 15 people in that small little rural area, they observed this object about as big as a barn, but it's a big red round object that's slowly moving down to the ground. It's only about 100 feet up, and it's slowly moving downward. And it was at this fellow's farm. His son was just coming out to visit him. His son's driving down the farm lane. He sees the object. He sees other people outside looking at it. He goes up on the hill to stop at a neighbor's house to get a better view, and it looks like this big round sphere is going to land in his dad's pasture. So there were two young boys with him, and they decide they want to go up and see what's going on up there. So they run over to the dad's farm. He grabs a .30-06 and a handful of ammunition. Well, he didn't realize until later that in that pile of ammunition, he had two tracers. So if anybody out there hunts, they know you just get that luminous trail when you fire that tracer. So they're making their way down towards the farm lane, down towards the pasture area. Dogs all over the area are going crazy. They hear this loud whirling sound, and they hear this baby crying sounds as well. They angle their truck with the headlights on to see the path up the hill. And they're mentioning the fact that it's strange. It looks like something's draining the power from the headlights. They had never seen that before. Well, historically, there have been numerous reports when UFOs are close by that they sometimes cause power failures and they drain the headlights or drain the power from vehicles. So they walked up to the top of the pasture, and they're standing there, and they're looking across the field, and they're stunned because they can't believe what they're seeing. That object was now on the ground or right above it. but now it was not a complete sphere. It was like half a sphere, like a big white dome, about 100 feet in diameter, and it's illuminating the whole area, making that whining noise. And they're standing there, they can't believe what they're seeing. And then their attention is drawn to a barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. Along that barbed wire fence are these two huge, hairy Bigfoot-type creatures, one behind the other, walking slowly in their direction. The fence posts are 6 feet tall. The one in front was about 8 feet tall. The one behind it's about 7 feet tall. They're bipedal, kind of bent over a little. The arms are so long, they're almost down to the ground. They have long, dark, matted hair hanging off the body. They have no neck. The eyes are about the size of a 50-cent piece, and they're glowing bright, luminous green. They're making this loud, baby crying, whining noise. The one kid's so scared, he runs out of the field. The other kid's yelling to the guy, shoot him, shoot him. When the guy takes a shot, that first shot is a tracer. He just got that luminous trail. When he fired the second shot, which was the second tracer, something very interesting happened. The largest of the two creatures reaches out as though to grab at that tracer. And at that exact moment, when it left out this loud crying, whining, baby crying sound, the object in the field vanished. It disappears. Almost all the luminosity is gone. The sound is gone. The creatures turn around slowly, start walking back along that barbed wire fence back towards the woods. At that point, the fellow is shooting from his 30-06 with live ammo into them. And he's aiming basically at the largest creature. And that guy said to me for years, he said, I'll never forget how that creature stared at me with those glowing green eyes as I'm pumping live ammo into it, my 30-06, and there's no effect on him whatsoever. And the guys both became very frightened, ran back to the truck, went back to the farmhouse, told the family what happened, took them to a neighbor's and called the state police. When the troop arrived 45 minutes later, he talked to the witness, and the witness said, look, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And the trooper said, we had a report the night before of two similar creatures seen up on the mountain. I have to investigate the report. So they go up in the troop car up into the pasture. They wanted to look for any evidence. And the trooper indicated to me, and he told me, he said, we went over to the area where the object had been on the ground. The whole area was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He said the farm animals would not go anywhere near it. He said to me, he said, I shined my flashlight beam into it. I could barely see the beam because it was so bright. And he said, if I had a newspaper, he said, I could have sat down that area, read the newspaper for the glow coming off that area.
Wow,
now,
that's crazy.
The whole story gets weirder and weirder. We don't have time to cover the whole story. I can tell you, they went back to the state police barracks, him and that witness. When they got back there, both the trooper and the witness were separately interviewed in two different rooms. And then after that, they called me to send my team up. And then even weirder stuff happened during the night. And it's an amazing story. Like I said, the whole story is in the Silent Invasion book. And it was the case that convinced me and my team that Bigfoot was a lot more than just a normal animal. There's a lot more to this mystery than any of us understand. And you thought that report was strange, it got even stranger after that.
Well, was that the Bell Farm where Barry went to look at, or was this a different place?
That's a completely different place. The Bell Farm was in Westmoreland County along the dairy side of the ridge. This is up in Fayette County, the one we just talked about.
So this stuff was going on over a wide area.
Say again?
So how many accounts do you have where there's Bigfoot activity other than just, okay, you got an animal here, but then you have weird lights? How many have you documented over the years as far as encounters where people have seen something weird along with a Bigfoot or a strange animal like a Black Panther or a Thunderbird or something like that? I mean, is it a large number? I would think it's really small, but it seems to be concentrated in that area.
And it's not just in PA. It's all over the country and around the world. I'm in touch with some very well-known research and others not well-known publicly, and a lot of these people are very much aware of the same kind of reports. I can't give you exact numbers, but I can tell you there are a lot more than people realize. But, once again, most Bigfoot have nothing to do with UFOs and strange lights or vice versa. But there are well-documented cases like this, and many, many cases which suggest that there's more to Bigfoot than just, again, a flesh and blood animal. And I wanted to tell you about the case, among others, during that time that was the one that convinced me that there was something other than flesh and blood involved with these incidents. So I'll be glad to tell you about that if you like.
Yeah, sure, go for it. I'd love to hear
okay.
it.
So during this wave...
Since we're on the topic, it's interesting stuff. I mean, it is.
Well, we could talk for days and days. There is so much information. There are so many cryptid reports. There's so many weird things, even in recent weeks we've been investigating around here. It's nonstop. And so anyhow, just to give you a little about that event, 1974, February 6th, way, way up in the mountains near Ohio Pile, which I'm sure you probably know where Ohio Pile is. And this was an incident that took place during a time period some of your listeners will probably remember, because there was a big national trucker strike going on. There was gas rationing across the country. There was a lot of violence on the highways. So at that time period in Pennsylvania, the National Guard was patrolling with the state police. They actually both responded to this incident that night. I couldn't get up there until early in the morning because I couldn't get gas locally to get up there. But the story was, and I interviewed this person numerous times and other people lived there and the investigators and everybody involved. A woman was sitting in her little cabin home deep in the mountains watching TV like she always did. Everything was fine and normal that night until she heard some commotion on her little front porch. She had some empty pop cans out there, and someone was knocking the pop cans around. And several weeks before, there was a pack of wild dogs came through, so she figured those dogs are probably back. So she thought, you know what, I'll just grab my shotgun, and I'll fire a shot over their head, and I'll scare the dogs away. So she goes over, and she loads one chamber of her shotgun, and she walks over to the wall, turns on the outside switch light, and walks to the front door and opens the front door and walks out on the porch. But there's no dogs. But only a few feet in front of her is this huge, hairy Bigfoot creature with his arms straight up over his head. So what does she do? She fires right into it. She said there's this bright flash, a bright flash of light, like the flash on a camera, and the creature physically vanishes in front of her. Now, her in-laws heard the gunshot.
That's insane.
Yeah, they called her and said, what are you shooting at? She tried to tell him. The son-in-law grabs his pistol, starts walking up that dark lane. He sees a dark figure running down the road. As he gets closer, he said he was surrounded by four or five hairy people with eyes like coals of fire. He started shooting at him, ran into the house. And as they're looking out the window, there's this large object, they said, like a big Christmas ornament with red lights on hovering over the woods at the same time.
Wow.
That's when they called the state police. Now, when the troopers and the National Guardsmen got there, they apparently saw some very odd things relating to how the animals reacted. What was there at the time was gone. But I talked to the primary investigator, and he said something really weird happened up here. That was based on the animal reactions. Now, I can tell you, while I've never seen a Bigfoot or UFO, I've seen many times the animals react soon after a Bigfoot encounter. Something you couldn't fabricate. People can be fooled. Animals can't. Very commonly, even the most ferocious dogs, when they're in a close vicinity to Bigfoot, they are just paralyzed in fear. They will not bark. They don't move. They cower. They hide. They cry. They whine. Sometimes they won't even eat right for 2 or 3 days later. Something you could not fabricate. And that's what they told me happened up there. I remember one trooper told me they had several big dogs. I think one was an Eskimo Spitz. One was in a cage. Dog wouldn't make a sound or move. Trooper opened it up. He actually tried to pull that dog out. That dog wouldn't even move. That dog should have ripped his arm off. And didn't make a sound the whole evening they were there. Next morning when I got there, everything was back to normal. That was the case, among others, which strongly suggested that we are dealing with something more than just flesh and blood. I don't have the answers. I keep an open mind. My position as a researcher is, for years and years, I'm documenting the information, I'm presenting it to researchers and the public to look at. You can believe whatever you want. I'm not out to prove anything because I don't have the answers, but I'm convinced more and more that one, Bigfoot and even some of the other cryptids we're dealing with appear to be something other than flesh and blood, which is why we have evidence at the time, but we have no bodies. And one thing
I
found years
ago.
Say that again?
I just wanted just to tell you real fast right along those lines, and that it was about 2-3 years ago, I was doing some Bigfoot research in southern Oklahoma. My wife and I and a friend, two sets of eyes, glowing eyes. I recorded a primate whoop. I have it on tape, and it's matched other whoops. It's a primate whoop, and I got two sets of eyes shining without any kind of light on them. And I'll tell you what, it's hard to accept even 2 years later. I'm like, did I see that? Did I see that? Because it's not, it stretches the realm of, okay, is this an animal or not? Plus, when you go out in the woods, I've been out. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I've been out in the woods at times before, and it's not just the animals. People pick it up. I've been around people. I've been out in the woods and stuff before. You know what? I don't get crazy when there's a deer around, but sometimes I've been in the woods, and other people I know that have been in the woods, they don't talk about it. But they get in the woods, and there's a sense of get out now. Well, what are you
going to
get attacked by, a raccoon, a deer? Other than somebody maybe selling meth or drugs or doing something in the woods, there shouldn't be anything in the woods to terrify you or scare you. I don't get that way in bear country. I don't get that way with mountain lions and bobcats. But when I've been in Bigfoot areas, certain ones, it's get out now. Or just a sense of it. You just there's no gun. You just want to run. And that's how those animals react. And, again, that to me seems more along the line of the occult and the supernatural than just a critter running in the woods. But go ahead. I just want to interject it because I can relate to that.
And that's very crazy, common. That's very common. Even Pennsylvania, other areas, many hunters I've talked to, many other people have encountered these creatures or been in areas where there's a lot of activity going on. They have this overpowering fear that something is telling them, you got to get out of here right now. And that is very, very common in a lot of these reports. And like I said, there's a lot of aspects of this phenomenon a lot of people don't know about or don't want to. Just like the smell. People always talk about the smell of Bigfoot. Well, there's not always a smell. In some cases, there's a very strong, pungent odor. I have smelled it. But in some cases, there's no smell whatsoever. And it's just amazing what's going on out there. What's going on in more and more recent years, including this year, I'm hearing from Bigfoot researchers, not only in Pennsylvania, all around the country, who are telling me they're out looking for Bigfoot in areas that have a history of Bigfoot. Instead, they're seeing strange lights, strange objects, and these strange firefly-type objects that are very luminous and glowing, and don't flick or like a firefly as such, but they actually light up the surrounding area. And this is becoming very, very common from many, many Bigfoot researchers as well.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, after a while, it just seems like there's areas that, hey, it's okay to go in. They're not going to mess with you. And then there's areas that I'm not sure that I want to go into. You get a sense of a gut feeling. If anybody gets a gut feeling, even just get out. That's God telling you, get out of there. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's a Bigfoot. It could be someone using drugs and doing meth. There's meth all over. I'm in Oklahoma. There is meth in the woods. There's pot in the summertime in the deep. And you run into that stuff, it might be God saying, get out. Not necessarily you ran into some occultic Bigfoot or something. But, that's fascinating stuff. Now, as you said, there's other – what all – kind of encounters you're dealing with, not just your thunderbirds, noises, ghosts, demons. There was a dragon thing. I don't know if you know this, even that there's has there been any missing people that you know of?
I have not. I was just talking to David Politis about this a couple weeks ago, and that's one thing. And I worked on hundreds of Bigfoot cases, and I've never really looked directly for missing people. Generally, I would probably have heard or there have been something like that going on. I can say this. I was one of the first in the country to work on alleged UFO abduction cases in the late 1960s. So the 60s, 70s, 80s, there was a lot of those alleged reports. And my teams investigated a lot of those cases, and some of those people for very, very credible people whose lives were being disturbed dramatically by something was going on. Am I to say that, yes, they were abducted by aliens from another planet? No, we can't. But something was happening. And And I've dealt with some of these people for years. I mean, I have one person I'm still in contact with. As recent as a couple of weeks ago, I talked to this person. I've been dealing with her for probably 40 years. When she was missing as a child in an area which has a lot of heavy activity of all kind of weird stuff, she was a young child. There was a massive search for her at the time. Police departments, fire departments were all out. And they found her right in the middle of a field that they had searched for hours, and she had no idea she was even missing or what was going on. Throughout her life, she had paranormal experiences, encounters with Bigfoot, UFOs, missing time, other cryptids. And then her children and later her grandchildren are now experiencing this phenomenon themselves. And that's not unique, because I've dealt with numerous other people who have had these type of events as well. Could it be that certain people have certain abilities that they're able to perceive this phenomena where other people can't? Could the phenomena be attracted to certain type of people? I said years and years ago, this phenomena is so strange it protects itself. It is so strange, it's hard for people to believe unless they have their own experience. And many of the witnesses I deal with are people who did not believe any of these things could occur. And once they have their experience, it's for them, it's life-changing, because they can't believe they actually encountered something that wasn't supposed to exist.
Well, that's crazy. I actually have all of Pilates' books, and I looked up before the show, and one of the quote he said in one of the books was that during my years of researching missing people, PA is the only state where I've classified the whole state as a geographical missing cluster. It has the most missing children compared to any other state. Its disappearances are baffling. Many absolutely are unexplainable. And you got a cluster Connersville. But you know what? Sometimes I used to think before I got this, it was all Bigfoot. But, you know, it may be all tied into all this stuff. It might be one big thing. I mean, but I would encourage you to go look around there for that stuff. But it's interesting, that area, some of these accounts, it sounds like they're in Bigfoot areas. That's Bigfoot taking them, but that's my assumption. But
I can tell you that in that area. Yeah, of the hundreds of Bigfoot cases I worked on and the multitudes of Bigfoot encounters that have happened even in daylight, I mean, at very, very close range with multitudes of witnesses, these creatures appear to be generally non-aggressive towards people. They've approached very close, and generally when they're seen, they'll take off. Yes, there are numerous reports of these things throwing boulders and rocks and big branches of people as though to get them out of their territory. They don't want anybody around there. We've heard a lot of reports like that. But generally, they don't seem to be aggressive towards people. And there have been multiple cases of people shooting at them, which I don't recommend. And I gave you an example of one case. There are multiple shooting cases mentioned in the Silent Invasion book. Nobody ever brought one down. In a few cases, they fell on the ground and got up and walked off. And they didn't, I mean, in most cases, they didn't even, they may have gone towards the shooter for a few, you know, a few steps towards them. They generally turned around and walked off when they easily could have hurt somebody. But, and it's not just Bigfoot reports. We're getting the Thunderbirds, the Black Panthers, floating entities, transparent creatures. And I'll give you one that just happened several weeks ago by a police officer on patrol. And this happened late August in Westmoreland County here in the southwestern part of the county. I've not identified it because he does not want to be identified. He contacted me soon after his encounter, and he was on a back road patrolling, which he patrolled the area very commonly. And as he's riding down the road, he notices what appeared to be a ball of very dull white light low to the ground. And he realized there was no artificial lighting in that area he'd ever seen before. And he got to about 150 yards away. And he said all of a sudden this round light suddenly rises up or stands up from the ground. That's when he observed something that he said he could not process. He said it was the weirdest thing he had ever seen. The ball of light was actually the head of a strange being that looked to be about 6 feet tall or larger. It was tall, almost skeletal thin. He said he was of the opinion of the creature when he first saw it was lying on its belly on the ground with its head facing the road. It then stood up facing a road. In a dark location, he saw the dull light from the glowing head illuminating the upper section of the body. As he watched, the creature turned to the right, and the dull illumination from the head lit up the shoulder area. The creature then turned and faced him, then turned to the left and took off at an incredible speed, away toward the location, away from the road. As it moved off, the witness could see its arms swinging. He said it took off at a speed that you could only call abnormal. It was faster than anything he had ever seen before. It was there, and then it was gone. And that is very important, because I hear that from so many people. They come and they go, they're here, and they disappear. The witness assumed the creature moved on two legs, but he never saw the lower section of the body. He said it was about 6 feet or taller. The head was about 8 to 10 inches in diameter, shaped like a ball. He said the head was just a ball of light, possibly egg-shaped and pretty round. The light emitted seemed to be a dull white. The light illuminated the shoulders, the top of the chest, and a section of the arms. The witness could not see the hands. The chest looked to be about 18 inches across. The waist was small. The arms were abnormally long. And the long limbs looked skeletal with no muscle mass to them. The skin tone appeared to be dull grayish blue. He couldn't see any facial features. As it ran off, he moved his patrol car up to the scene, turned on a spotlight, looked around for evidence on the ground. There was nothing there. Interestingly, several weeks ago, I get a report from another witness who doesn't even have a computer, didn't know anything about this, and this would have been, I think, mid-September in another part of the county, and this person encountered a creature that was very, very similar. So this is just an example of some of the weird things that are going on.
The thing is, it would be really tough on your end is telling, is this beast A, is it paranormal, is it natural? Because just because it appears and it touches you and leaves evidence doesn't mean it's something that's, not a supernatural, occultic, or of this world or whatever. And that would be, at some levels, I'm trying to drive me crazy. But,
yeah.
I mean, what do you think, what is it about that area? What do you think's going on there? It's why is it so concentrated there? This started, obviously, I bet if you go back, before they started writing books and stuff, when settlers first started coming here, maybe something happened. But I don't understand what the area is so concentrated of stuff that it just, I've never seen any place like it. I think there probably are, but what do you think is going on there?
I don't think anybody knows for sure. One thing I found years ago is that looking at the reports and where they happen, and I've been out in the field investigating multitudes of reports for years and years, many close-range, low-level UFO encounters and many close encounters with cryptids, so Bigfoot and the Thunderbirds and these weird creatures and Black Panthers very commonly occur in high-energy sources around power plants, high-tension power lines, radio towers, water reservoirs, railroad tracks, communication towers, gas wells. There's no doubt there's an energy connection to the phenomena. And The more I look at all these reports, I think somehow they might all be somehow related, just don't know exactly how it is. But there are so many reports coming in of weird things from so many different areas, and some of them are very strange. One of my another associate researcher, he gets a lot of reports from the Chestnut Ridge through the Laurel Ridge up through the mountains, and he called me a few weeks ago because he wondered if I've been getting any reports, and I had been, and he had been interviewing different people, and up outside of the Chestnut Ridge, up in the area up towards Ligonier, he got a report mid-October of a person seeing a huge giant bird, estimate at least a 10 to 12 foot wingspan, like a giant hawk, and it was close enough when it was flapping its wings. They should have been able to hear the flapping of the wings, but they didn't. But the witness told him the weirdest thing was it was transparent, and they could see through the body of this huge giant bird. And that's not something that's unheard of. We're getting other reports of other creatures like this, even with Bigfoot, in some cases where the complete body isn't seen. Sometimes some of the body's in focus, sometimes other parts aren't. What I'm telling you,
there's
a lot more to what people realize. It's much stranger.
Do you have any good report you can tell of like a half showing Bigfoot and one that you don't mention? in your books or anything?
Yeah, there's many. In fact, my newest book, Astonishing Encounters, gets into all kind of really, really weird, including Black Panther reports. The Black Panthers is another phenomena that's very strange, and you had brought this up a little bit ago, and I didn't think I talked about it, but another thing a lot of people haven't heard about is sometimes you have more than one cryptid seen together. So sometimes you have a Bigfoot seen in connection with a Black Panther or another cryptid. And sometimes when you have a localized outbreak of Bigfoot sightings, you also have an outbreak of other cryptids going on at the same time. Very commonly, Black Panther reports.
Well, I know in the wild there's never been a Black Panther taken. That trait, the melanism, there's never been a carcass of a Black Panther ever recorded. So whatever these things are, Jaguarundis or some of the occult, there's something truly unique, almost like the Bigfoot are too. But again, you know, what are you shooting if you do shoot one? What are you capturing if you do capture one? It would be great to see one, love to. But, I mean, that's fascinating stuff. I mean, is any reports kicked up because of your involvement in that, the invasion of Chestnut Ridge? Well,
you know, a lot of people around here have heard about it. A lot of people haven't seen it yet. A lot of people are here ordering it from Small Town Monsters. But I just get reports, even in recent weeks, from people who live up in that area. And, you know, a lot of these people are hesitant to call or don't know who to call, and they talk to a relative or neighbor, and they give them my number, tell them to contact me. And a lot of them are just really reluctant to talk about it, but they quite often feel a lot better when they realize they're not the only ones calling in reporting the same thing in those areas. So, I mean, in recent weeks we're getting, you know, like I said, UFO reports. We're getting some possible Bigfoot activity up along the ridges. We're hearing, you know, Thunderbird stuff. There's been other Thunderbird sightings earlier this year up on the ridge, and one family actually got a picture of some of these things on the ground, these huge, weird birds that are very, very strange. There's so much going on out there. Can you imagine how much is going on and we're not even hearing about it?
No, and I think that's what it was great. I mean, as far as what I've seen, you had one of the first groundbreaking research groups in the country that was actually trying to do a scientific search of stuff. Even today, you know, most of your Bigfooters are just guys that just, you know, I don't know how scientific it are. I know guys that are trying, but you know, it's important to do good research. And the group you amassed and the research you were doing is pretty outstanding. It'd be pretty exciting to be involved with it. But it's like never ending. Is there any closure that you've ever had on any of this stuff?
Oh, you know, years and years ago when you got all this data and you're beginning to see some patterns, and then all of a sudden some other cases turn up, completely destroys your theory. You know, I started with Bigfoot being an unknown primate. Like I said, I keep an open mind. But more and more, I think the evidence suggesting we're dealing with a phenomenon that under certain conditions comes into our physical reality, leaves evidence, and then it's gone. They come and they go. And again, for lack of a better term, I think we're dealing with something that's interdimensional, and we don't have all the science about it yet. I think someday we will. I think we're starting to see clues about it, but there's a lot of mysteries out there, which as of yet, I don't think science can yet explain.
Yeah, that's true. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Is there anything you'd like to add? And
yeah,
before
if people
I go
want to
promote,
reach me,
tell people where you can get a hold of you.
Yeah, they go to my website, www.stangordon.info. Email is on there, but you can go to paufo@comcast.net. All my books are available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. At Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot Casebook, Astonishing Encounters, Pennsylvania's Unknown Creatures, and Really Mysterious Pennsylvania. And then there's the document I did on Kecksburg. It's still available on DVD called Kecksburg, the Untold Story.
That was awesome. It's great to have you, Stan. You're an amazing guy. You need to write more books. You are a pro at talking on the radio. I can tell you've done this 100 times. Man, I'd love to have you on again because I just touched just the tip of the iceberg. But, man, thanks so much for having you on, and everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll see you another week here with another amazing guest, hopefully as good as Stan or better, which I doubt there are. Thank you, Stan. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. It was a great show.
You've been listening to Jurassic Park Radio with host Todd Jurassic. Find us on Facebook and at JurassicPark.net. Send your own mysterious encounters and stories to ToddJurassic@gmail.com. God bless, and thank you for listening.